care when they need to, regardless of how they're insured.
Are there any consequences to being complacent or apathetic about this issue? Having such a progressive state, progressive abortion laws in a state like Oregon, is that something we can expect to see, regardless of what happens to Roe, that our that abortion rights are cemented into state law?
I think that's a great question. So the thing that I like to say is that Oregon didn't get here overnight, right? It wasn't that we magically woke up and we were one of the most pro-sexual reproductive health care, expanding access to abortion, protecting it in our state law. We did not codify the right to abortion in our state until 2017. So I think that's always interesting. We were one of the first states to not make it illegal before the Roe decision, but we did not codify that right in state law until 2017 with the passage of the Reproductive Health Equity Act and with champions like Speaker Kotek and Governor Brown and, you know, all sorts of, and all are like champions in the Senate and the House. But we worked really hard to be able to elect those pro-sexual and reproductive health care champions. One of the biggest lessons I think we all need to learn is that state elections matter a lot. And with a court that comprised with the individuals that it has now, with those being lifetime appointments, with a number of those justices being very young, it's going to matter more than ever that we're working hard and not being complacent to make sure that we're voting up and down the ballot for people who are going to protect our fundamental rights and freedoms and expand access to health care. Because in the last 4 or 5 years has taught us anything, it is not to take anything for granted and not to feel like you are just safe in your little like corner of the world, because no man is an island. And we should care about what's happening in Texas, and we should care about what's happening in Mississippi. And we should be thinking about how Oregon can be a leader and a beacon for folks who need to get care and might need to travel to our state to do so. Roe has always been the floor, not the ceiling. We know that it has not been enough. It's still not enough. That legal right to abortion is still not enough for people who live here in Oregon and can't access the care they need because of distance or expense. And so we have to be ever vigilant to make sure that our state is able to preserve access to health care, access to fundamental freedom, and we can't ever take it for granted.
You're listening to KBOO Evening News. We've been hearing from Oregon reproductive justice organizations about barriers to abortion access here in Oregon and the impact of Idaho's restrictive laws for Eastern Oregonians. Music in this segment was Ragtime by Fearless, courtesy of Epidemic Sound. I'm Claire Rosciato. Tune in tomorrow at 5 p.m. to hear the next episode of this podcast. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we start our show, we would like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And yeah, so today we are going to be discussing a topic that we have talked about many times in this show, but it looks like Amazon, the massive mega conglomerate, is once again in the hot seat for their scorched earth union busting tactics. It was revealed during a recent hearing in front of the National Labor Relations Board, or the NLRB, that an anti-union consultant employed by Amazon made a promise to a warehouse worker that he would relay her workplace concerns directly to the CEO, or to the then CEO, Jeff Bezos, you know, also one of the richest men in the world. That move is almost certainly a violation of one, if not multiple, federal labor laws. So yeah, that puts them in the hot seat once again. The Amazon worker, Natalie Monarez, testified during an NLRB hearing last week that in May of 2021, she had a 45-minute conversation with an anti-labor consultant who she said introduced himself innocuously as an outside, quote, auditor, which, that can mean a number of different things. And, it didn't immediately make clear to the worker that he was, in fact, a union, anti-union consultant, but rather just someone auditing maybe the systems at the place, or, it could have been a government auditor. You never know. And so after asking the employee to list her concerns and issues about the job, he claimed that the information would be relayed straight to Bezos himself because his boss, quote, had direct ties to Jeff Bezos. Never really sure exactly which way he pronounces it, but either way, that was a lie. And during their testimony, during the testimony, the worker also shared that this ask was an immediate red flag, since this was the first time in her 5 years at Amazon that management had ever ever cared to ask her about any work-related problems. And so immediately this, raised a red flag for her, because she's like, well, no boss or any supervisor has ever asked or cared about, how I'm doing it on the job or if I have any concerns about the job. And now here is this sketchy, quote, auditor from outside asking me about that. Immediately, raised her concerns, because that was in the middle of a massive union drive taking place at that facility. The facility, of course, is the one we're referring to here is the Staten Island JFK 8 facility that actually won their unionization drive, their election in the end of last year, which was historically the first Amazon facility to unionize in the entire country, which was a major deal. And so, yeah, this incident was brought up during a hearing in front of the NLRB, and it was pointed out that U.S. labor law restricts companies from promising new perks to workers if they reject unionization, or if they simply imply that their concerns will be fixed if they choose not to unionize. So basically a quid pro quo, like, we'll fix your problem, we'll deal with your issue if you give us the thing of not unionizing. So that is a direct violation of federal labor law, which was clearly spelled out in an email sent to Bloomberg News by former NLRB chair during the Obama administration, Wilma Liebman, who wrote, "Unless a company has a pre-existing practice of soliciting grievances, beginning to do so during a union organizing campaign and promising to fix the grievances is coercive, in that it tells employees that they don't need a union to address their issues." So that is basically exactly what this outside consultant, anti-union consultant, did. They promised to fix grievances, the workers' grievances, in exchange for not voting for the union. And so, again, a clear violation of labor law. Which, so it's funny that this came out as an extra revelation during the hearings. And yeah, it came out as part of the labor board's investigation into accusations that during last year's successful union election at the facility in Staten Island, the company illegally coerced employees in numerous ways to vote against the union. So this is just another thing that came out as they were already investigating other ways that the company coerced employees. This was yet another coercion tactic. And so those other coercion tactics that they are already being rung up for include prohibiting organizers from distributing union literature even while they're on breaks, while the workers are on breaks, threatening to slash wages and benefits if workers form a union, telling employees that organizing efforts would fail because the union organizers were, quote, criminals and thugs. And, in this instance, the company even went so far as to have the Amazon Labor Union president, Chris Smalls, and several other ALU organizers arrested for trespassing after they entered the facility on their day off to pass out free lunches to their coworkers while they were taking their breaks. Which seems, obviously, there are companies, a company that of that size has restrictions around when you can't, if you're not clocked in, you can't be in the facility. But it seems pretty insane to arrest employees of that facility for trespassing simply by being there on their days off. And it's very clear they did so because they were simply trying to encourage their fellow coworkers to consider the union. you know, by providing them with nice free hot lunches. I think it was turkey sandwiches or something they were handing out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, during they also held captive daily mandatory captive audience meetings. And during those meetings, union busting consultants and Amazon managers refused to use the term, you know, union, for fear of planting any seeds in people's heads. So they instead kept referring to some nebulous, you know, third party that was trying to come in just to take their money. So again, you know, obfuscating the truth and kind of lying about who it was that was actually engaged in the organizing, instead of just being like, oh, your coworkers are trying to band together with you. Yeah. They talked about some money grabbing outside third party, some nefarious third party. And, you know, another thing that the company did was they actively fired employees, including Chris Smalls, who were involved in organizing efforts. They found very thin excuses to fire these workers for, you know, other minor infractions, when clearly it was just retaliation for their engagement in the organizing efforts. And, you know, as we've been discussing here, the company also used illegal coercion tactics by asking employees to reveal their workplace grievances and then promising to fix them if they voted against the unionization effort. And so it wasn't just the one employee that testified, but apparently it was multiple employees that had that quid pro quo offered to them or thrust upon them.
Yeah, and I think this is important too, because, you know, as we've said time and time again on this show, all of these laws are really only as valuable as they are enforced, right? Yeah. And so when things like this come up, I think it's super important that they be brought to light and they be acted on, because, you know, otherwise it's just kind of talk of a fair playing field instead of there actually being one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, in years past, the enforcement of such things through the NLRB has been kind of lax. And, you know, to his credit, or to their credit, the Biden administration has really given, put new people in charge of the NLRB, new representatives, new chair people on the labor board, and has really kind of given them the support that is needed to go after these companies.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll discuss in a little bit what the NLRB is actually able to do and what they aren't able to do in terms of, like, enforcement of things, but they, you know, at least the Biden administration has signaled their support for organized labor and for workers by reconstituting the makeup of the board and really unleashing them to go after companies that do clear violations of labor law and try and infringe workers' ability to unionize.
Yeah.
So in this case, which is now in front of a judge, the labor board's general counsel, Jennifer Abruzzo, is seeking, as retribution, an order requiring Amazon to read a message to employees clearly explaining their workplace rights that were violated, and to post that message electronically and in high visibility locations within the facility, including in bathroom stalls. And this is something that, you know, you've seen the labor board require of other companies, including Starbucks, which is in a massive unionizing drive and upheaval right now. But that is, you know, one of the main things that the NLRB is capable of doing, which is enforcing that the company itself make clear to the workers what their workplace rights are and how those workplace rights have been violated. She's also asking the judge to require mandatory training about workers' rights for Amazon's managers and its outside union consultants, which is interesting because those union consultants are basically there's anti-union consultants. Their entire job is knowing the labor laws, you know, workers' rights, and then figuring out strategically how to violate those. So that would be a nice added bonus on top there. Now, as I mentioned, it should be noted that, you know, of course, it should be noted and, you know, definitely remedied by the Democrats as they are in power currently, that the NLRB has no authority to impose any punitive damages against the company for violating labor laws. So they can't enforce any fines. But, you know, what they can do is require other remedies, such as posting those legal notices around facilities, and also requiring the reversal of policies or punishments that did, in fact, break the NLRB's regulations, the labor laws. So, you know, obviously it would be great if there was more enforcement, you know, more teeth given to the enforcement board, with regards to, like, requiring the companies to pay out and pay damages out. or maybe be, you know, have some financial impact as a result of their breaking of labor laws. You know, but that isn't where we are, and there are a lot of laws that need to be passed, you know, pro-worker laws that need to be passed to strengthen what the NLRB can do. But, you know, they are doing something. They are doing everything they can within their means, which is great. But, of course, you know, in light of these serious enforcement limitations on the part of the labor board, and the fact that, like, the financial resources of companies like Amazon and Starbucks and all these other companies dwarf those of even the country's most powerful unions, a major political intervention is required just to really begin the process that you were talking about earlier, like balancing the scales between the interests of working people in this country and those of Amazon's corporate bosses and of, you know, the capital-owning class more broadly. Obviously, you know, there needs to be more politicians that take more stands to you know, call these things out and to enforce them. And there needs to be more understanding within the public to, you know, support union, you know, not cross picket lines and support strikes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I think we're seeing just two different ways to deal with something like this. And I think it's funny too, you know, I mentioned two ways to deal with something. It's like these are all just like rights that people are already entitled to, right?
Yeah.
So it's like we're kind of fighting over things that have already been decided. But, you know, you take a look at something like Microsoft, right? Where, you know, Microsoft has recently recognized the union started at their latest acquisition, Activision Blizzard, which is like a video game developer and publishing company. And, you know, again, they're Microsoft is being viewed as like very radical, but really they're just allowing people to have rights they already are entitled to. And so, right. You know, the conversation that we're having is about the companies who are, I think, being less smart about the situation and failing to recognize the inevitability of kind of what's going on in the culture and in society. So
yeah.
It's an interesting kind of dichotomy there. And then also, you know, I think it's like we've stated a million times, I think it's very important that we hold people accountable for this and make sure it's brought up because, again, if the laws aren't being enforced properly, then, you know, they might as well not exist.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like exactly like you said, you know, this Amazon and, you know, as we talked about on last month's episode, Starbucks, you know, the two companies out in the forefront of the massive,
like the anti.
Yeah. Exactly. And like, you know, the two companies that are getting a lot of attention for the massive unionization efforts that are happening among their workers, but also, you know, almost more notably for the company's insistence on these just absolutely vile, like scorched earth anti-union tactics, it with complete disregard to what existing labor law or like breaking labor workers' rights, because they recognize the situation that we're talking about, which is that they are financial behemoths. They are companies that could outspend unions 1,000 times over and not even break a sweat. And, you know, so there's that. They have the money and the time to outlast these unions. And they also recognize that, like, the enforcement mechanisms from the state are very weak. And so, like, they will get hit with, oh, we have to read this letter to our workers and make sure they understand their rights. But we don't have to pay a fine. None of our leadership has to be fired or go to jail or anything like that. And so, you know, what is the real cost of continuing these brutal anti-union tactics? It's just maybe getting hit with the slap on the wrist, essentially, you know, in their case. And yeah, like we were talking last month again about the massive effort at Starbucks and the really successful effort to organize all over the country for Starbucks workers. And the NLRB has also stepped in and really supported what workers are doing there and has, you know, levied, I forget what the number was, but there was some unprecedented number of violations against the company Starbucks for their violations of labor law. And which, you know, so it was accurately recognized as the NLRB doing something unprecedented by like bringing this many cases against a single company. But again, it could also accurately be described as them just enforcing basic labor law, you know, what is on the books, which is something that just doesn't get done all that often. And under previous administrations and in previous eras was just not even something that the government sought to do. And so we are in maybe a moment of sea change, but, you know, it is only the very beginning of that. And so, yeah, you know, of course, it requires workers taking the initiative and, you know, it's also notable that like a lot of, you know, the ALU, the Amazon Labor Union, is an independent union that was not part of any larger union. They formed themselves. And the Starbucks workers union, you know, it has now joined with a larger workers union, but the workers themselves at these Starbucks just formed their own union because they recognized they need it. And so, you know, it is amazing to see what workers at the grassroots level are doing, and they are stepping forward and taking it upon themselves. But it is implicit upon, you know, large unions in this country to really step up and try and put the funding behind these efforts and try and get their hands into more industries, because this is a moment of fire growing around the working class in this country. And so they need to recognize that and finally step up. You know, they've been so diminished for the last 60 years. It's time for them to finally step up and support this. But then, of course, it is also, on the other hand, time for the Democratic Party, the ostensibly left-wing, or rather like liberal pro-labor party, to really step up again and to do more to support these unions. And so, you know, to that end, the Democrats have done, you know, there are some things that they have done. And in just a moment, I will describe some of the biggest things that they've done. But if you are just joining us, this is Labor Radio, and we are discussing basically Amazon's scorched earth anti-union tactics and some of the revelations that have come out during the NLRB, the National Labor Board's investigation into Amazon's anti-union tactics. And we are now going to go back and discuss what the Democratic Party and what politicians are doing to support the workers who are being exploited by Amazon. In response to what the case that the NLRB has brought against Amazon, Senators Bernie Sanders and Kirsten Gillibrand have sent a letter to the current Amazon CEO, Andy Jassy, urging him to drop the company's objections to the NLRB objections at the NLRB, and to finally recognize the Amazon Labor Union's historic victory at the Staten Island facility that happened at the end of last year. Their letter reads, quote, "If Amazon can afford to spend $10 billion in stock buybacks to enrich its wealthy shareholders and executives, including the second richest person in the world, Jeff Bezos, it can afford a unionized workforce. If Amazon can spend over $4 million in a single year on union busting and $213 million a year on your compensation, you know, directed to the CEO, then it can afford a workplace that can collectively bargain for better wages, better benefits, safer working conditions, and reliable schedules. We strongly urge you to respect the will of Amazon workers by dropping your objections, recognizing the Amazon Labor Union, and negotiating in good faith. It is time for Amazon to end its blatant disregard of labor law and to treat workers with the respect and dignity that they deserve." And so again, that is a letter written by Senators Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, which is the state that the election in question was held in. And so, you know, since workers in Staten Island became the first ever Amazon warehouse to successfully vote to form a union in the U.S., Amazon has basically retaliated by refusing to negotiate even a first contract with the new union, mm-hmm. Refusing to recognize that the union even exists. So not only refusing to negotiate, but just refusing to accept or to recognize that the election happened, that the union exists at all. And, you know, on top of that, they have themselves, the company has filed 25 objections to the election with the NLRB, despite the fact that the NLRB itself certified the victory as it was. And, you know, so on top of all that, since workers in Bessemer, Alabama, at a facility there, kicked off their campaign to be the first Amazon facility to unionize, which took place over a year ago, you know, it was unsuccessful ultimately, but they were the first facility to actually really take on that effort. And since that point, which is a little over a year, maybe a year and a half ago, Amazon, the company, has been waging basically an all-out war against their workers' fundamental right to unionize. So again, you know, not only are they refusing to recognize the actual event that took place, which is that a union was formed, an election, a successful vote for it happened, and that vote was certified, but they are also just, you know, completely putting all their energy and resources towards just a war against their workers in order to prevent any further unionization efforts.
Yeah, I mean, and why would they be expected to do any different? Because this has worked, like, famously for people for the last little while here. So, I mean, it's pretty expected behavior.
It is. It absolutely is. And in fact, on top of the hearing that we've been discussing, there are also currently 51 open unfair labor practice cases that are levied against Amazon that are pending now in front of the NLRB. So not only is it this, you know, their refusal to acknowledge the election that took place and all of the instances of them breaking labor law to coerce workers not to support the union, but that's just the first thing that has been brought against them. There is now also 51 other open cases of unfair labor practices that they will then have to deal with following that. And, you know, on top of this, away from the NLRB, in actual federal court, Amazon has been penalized more than $75 million for breaking federal discrimination and wage laws. So that is something, although $75 million as compared to the billions upon billions that they earned even just last year is not a lot. But along with the letter to Amazon's CEO, Senator Bernie Sanders has also loudly been calling on President Biden to bar Amazon from receiving lucrative federal contracts so long as it continues to perpetuate labor violations on its massive nationwide workforce. So that might be an area in which, you know, the company might actually take notice, and it might hurt their bottom line a bit more and might shape their approach a bit more, because Amazon has such massive contracts with the federal government, not only with, like, the Defense Department, but with, you know, most of the government itself as well.
Well, you stop talking about overhead and you start talking about, like, actual revenue.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's honestly, like, the only way that things change, like, because that is what companies base their decisions upon. It's, like, projected revenue and their profits. And so once you stop, you know, just talking about, oh, we'll have to pay this fine here or there, but when you actually curtail a stream of revenue for a company, specifically a company like Amazon, that's when they might actually turn heads and pay attention. And, you know, on top of that, last year Amazon increased its profits by 75% to a record-breaking $35 billion while avoiding over $5 billion in taxes that they should have been paying. And all of that came while they were spending $4.3 million on union-busting consultants and lawyers. In just the first quarter of this year, of 2022, the company broke its own record by spending over $5 million on federal lobbying, with the majority of those funds going towards lobbying lawmakers specifically on labor issues and labor laws, demanding more lax, you know, enforcement of labor laws. As if that isn't enough insult added to the injury of, you know, what they have done to violate their workers' labor laws or labor rights, the new CEO, Andy Jassy, earned $212.7 million last year alone, which amounts to over 6,000 times the average take-home pay of your typical Amazon worker. So, you know, I think it was something like in the height of the New Deal era and in the, you know, the height of the golden era of you know, American economics, or, you know, the American economy, I think it was something like the CEO would never earn more than like 100 times the average worker or something like that.
Yeah.
And here we are talking about a CEO, a new CEO too. You know, he's only been in office his job for a year at most. And he's earning over 6,000 times the average income of one of his workers. So that's, you know, there's a lot to be done. Of course, you know, there is so much more that the Democratic politicians and that these big labor unions can do to really force Amazon's hand and make them engage in good faith with the unions. But, you know, these letters, calling upon the president and calling them out in the media and at the NLRB, these are things that they've done, and hopefully the politicians will continue to do this. And we will obviously keep you abreast of all these issues. We will be back on next month, the third Monday of next month. But until then, thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilland.
Have a wonderful evening.
a very far